This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Final hour of Grant and Danny. Welcome back, 106.7 The Fan, alongside Danny Ruye. I'm Grant Paulson. Thanks for listening. You can follow us on Twitter, at FunnyDanny and at Grant H. Paulson, for the two of us. I want to go to the Mattress Warehouse hotline, though. Welcome onto the show. A guy we had on the program last month and really enjoyed talking to, and so we got to get him back on. Today felt like a good day to do it, with the NBA taking center stage in the sports world. The Wizards are in. So you're saying there's a chance. They're the 9 seed in the East. They got an opportunity to force a play into the playoffs. Jason Smith, the former Wizard, now with NBC Sports Washington, joins us now. Jason, great to talk to you again. How have you been? Much appreciated.
Fellas, I'm glad to be back. I appreciate you guys for inviting me back. I must have said something right. I acted like I know what I'm talking about, but I'm glad to be back.
Dude, you
know
what it was? You fooled us, man. Yeah.
You were nice to us. You were said nice things. So it wasn't anything you said about basketball, but you were just nice. So we said, well, that guy, we like him.
Well, it's so remarkable, the Disney content, right?
You better believe it.
Speaking of Disney, that's where they're going to be playing. The NBA's coming back. If you were on a roster right now, how would you feel about this proposal and this plan?
You know what? It just depends on what team you're on. Obviously, they wanted to try and finish out this season to get some closure to it. It's going to be really tough just to get back in the NBA mindset. It's different timing. It's an odd time of the year. This is basically summertime when most teams would be done and over with. I mean, obviously the late playoff teams would be still playing, but this is going to be tough. Very, very tough for NBA guys, A, to get back in shape, then to get refocused, to go down to Orlando, to have the bubble sites. It's going to be very, very difficult. How are you going to have home court advantages? There's going to be no people and there's no fans, no crowds. So really, this is just to try and make sure that we finish out the season, get a closure, get a champion put out there. And even then, there's going to be an asterisk by this champion. It's going to be a very, very tough thing to say, hey, this year they were the champion, but 2020, the pandemic year, I think that's going to be the title for this champion is the pandemic year. This was the champion. So it's going to be rough.
Jason, I felt like this is going to benefit veteran teams. I'm thinking specifically just LeBron and just the hard minutes that he's played over the years, the extra mileage, whether it's Team USA going to the finals every time he gets out of bed, and just, you know, the extra work and the year he's having this season, by the way, just carrying the Lakers to be one of the best teams in the league. I think he could probably use the rest, heavy minutes guys like that. I thought it would benefit the Lakers. Give me some other teams maybe that you think it might benefit, or you could tell me I'm wrong about the Lakers.
You know, I actually absolutely agree with the Lakers because LeBron has so many minutes on his body. He has so many miles. I think for him, this is a much-needed break. He's in year 17. He's looking better than ever. He retuned himself for this last year. It's been amazing to watch him work out there. But you've got to remember, there's still a lot of teams out there that are younger. My team that I'm kind of worried about, Philadelphia 76ers. What is Joel Embiid going to look like? What's Ben Simmons going to look like? They were a team that was in the playoff hunt and in the championship hunt, but I just don't know how they're going to come back off of this pandemic lifestyle. And that's not even just for one team. It's for all the teams. You might have some of the guys that have workout places at their own house. They might have courts at their own house to work out. But what about the guys that are stuck in apartments in inner city living? I mean, there's Zoom workouts, yes, but that's not going to get you in basketball shape. That's going to keep you maintaining a level of fitness to try and say that you're healthy. But to run up and down a court, to jump, to shoot hoops, it's going to be a toss-up to see who's in shape and whatnot. But I think that's why the NBA did a great job of saying, hey, we're going to give you guys a little bit of time to do a little training camp. Then we're going to go down to Orlando. It's going to give guys a chance to get back in shape, get back into playing shape, because that was the biggest concern, is that you don't want to come back from this pandemic and really have teams go in out of shape, and then you have the possibility of getting guys hurt. I think that was a major concern for a lot of the major players that are outside of the playoff picture looking in. So it's a lot of things that go into it, and I think Adam Silver has done a phenomenal job in communicating with the Players Association and making sure that he's doing everything right. Obviously, you don't know if you're going to do things right. This is all uncharted territory that we're in, and I think that for him, he's doing a very, very good job of communicating and rolling with the punches, because nobody knows how this is going to go. And it's going to be great for the fans to get NBA basketball back on TV. We're going to have sports. I think that will kind of ease things and give people a little bit of hope that this is going to get better.
Jason Smith, former Wizard, with us on G&D. You can follow him on Twitter at JasonSmith014. You should be following him already. He's got entertaining and fun NBA takes, as well as movies and all kinds of different stuff. Jason, as far as the Wizards go, we know that Wall's not going to play. That was a pipe dream for some people. Beal's been carrying this team. I don't want to see him go out and play like 41 minutes and then basically go to the mattress trying to like squeeze out wins and be George Mason and go on some crazy run here. I'd love to develop some of the young guys with some nice opportunities to play in these big games. How do you think they'll handle it? How would you handle it if you were running the show?
You know, it's very tough to say, because Brad is a key part of this team moving forward and the future of this team moving forward. And I think for the rest of the guys on the team, this is your opportunity to come back from a pandemic, to show the coaches, to show the front office that you didn't stop working. You're continuing to try and get better through tough times. And I think that for them moving forward, they need to get within four games of that eighth spot to give themselves a chance to make the playoff picture. Now, if they get into the playoffs, that gives them another opportunity, the young guys, the unproven guys, to go out and play playoff basketball. Grant, mind you, this is the whole big picture. This is uncharted territory. We don't know what playoff basketball is going to be like with no fans, with a very bubble site oriented. Like, they're talking about shipping in courts for home court advantage, quote unquote. So we'll see what happens. I think for the Wizards, though, they just have to focus on getting back in shape, take it a game at a time, but be very mentally sharp to know, hey, we still have a chance to make the playoffs.
Jason Smith with us here on Grant and Danny. Jason, who are you most looking forward to seeing? I mean, for me, obviously, I want Beal running the show and knocking down shots and being the stud, but among the young kids in a semi-pressured environment, right? This is good for young players to kind of be in games that are meaningful, instead of just sort of playing out the string in April and May, as you might normally see. Who are you excited to see in this little bit of a pressure cooker?
You know, I am very excited to see Rui Hachimura's development. I would love to see him get a taste of the playoffs. I think he's done a phenomenal job all year long of remaining consistent. Yeah, he had a little bit of the injury bug, but you can't prevent that. If you play long enough, you play hard enough throughout the years, you're going to have injuries. But for him to come back the way that he did, I think he's just a consistent player for the Wizards that can only get better moving forward. And I think for him, if they were to get that taste of the playoffs, yeah, this is going to be a little bit different this year. But to play deeper into the year, to play against the best, I would say better or best competition, if you're going to be the eighth spot, you're going to be going against the Milwaukee Bucks or Toronto Raptors. And it's only going to make you better if you go against the better competition. So I look forward to seeing what he can do. One of the personal favorites for me, Mo Wagner, to really go out there and have an opportunity to prove to the coaches and prove to the league that, hey, he's making a statement and he's defining his role in the league. So those are the couple guys on the Wizards that I look forward to watching.
All right, let me go non-sports for a second, because your Twitter bio says car enthusiast, movie fanatic. We've talked movies with you a bunch. But first, the car part of this. The coolest car you've ever owned, and also I would say the dream car that maybe you haven't, wife and kids maybe keeping you from that, that you would want to own at some point?
You know, my my current cars that I own, the best car, well, really the best car I've ever owned is Audi RS7. I am a sports car enthusiast. I've always loved them. But at my size, it's been very difficult to try and figure out which cars I can fit into. 7 feet, leg room becomes a bit of an issue. Headroom becomes a bit of an issue. So you really got to stick to the four-door sports cars. The two doors get a little bit cramped. And my sunroof, sometimes I got to duck the head in there. I mean, I may not be the safest person in my vehicles because if I were to get in an accident, thank goodness there's airbags, because I would hope the car would turn into a marshmallow and protect me, slamming my legs into anywhere. But thank goodness, knock on wood, I've never been in any bad accidents, so nor do I hope to be. But the Audi RS7 is by far the best car I've ever owned. Dream car. It was funny. I was walking through the neighborhood, and it's funny that you asked me this question. My neighbor, he was trading in a Ferrari. And the Ferrari dealership came to pick up his Ferrari and deliver his new Ferrari. I was like, man, I wish I could fit into a Ferrari. That would be a dream car for me, but I just don't think that my 7-foot frame will be fitting into any Ferraris, nor would I be able to probably afford any Ferraris or want to. So that would be a dream of mine for sure.
That's something I've never thought about, by the way. Jason, is like being, you're 7 foot tall, dude. Like, flying, can you just buy it?
It doesn't go away, yeah.
No, can you buy, like, you go to a hotel, do you have to ask for a special bed? Or, like, when you're on a plane, can you just buy a ticket? Like, I buy a ticket? How does that work?
You know, those are great questions, because if I go to a hotel, I just get a normal king-size bed. I've always been used to hanging my feet off the end of the bed, and there's one instance, the only hotel in the NBA that we traveled to in all the cities was Portland. We stayed at a hotel in Portland, and they all had California king beds. And I was like, man, this is really nice. I don't have to hang my feet off the edge of the bed. However, in the middle of the night, I found myself sliding down to the edge of the bed, non-consciously, to hang my feet off the bed. I wake up about 3 feet away from my headboard, and I'm like, what is going on? I'm just hanging my feet off the bed. It's just normal to me to have those crazy things just happen to you. But as far as airplanes, anytime I'm not traveling with my family, I try and get the exit row on Southwest. There's a seat that doesn't have a seat in front of it. That's my seat. That is my seat. I try to make sure that I stand up, let everybody know I'm looking around, making eye contact with people on the Southwest line. Like, hey, just let you know I'm going to be sitting in that seat. That's my seat. Don't touch it. But sometimes I get it. Sometimes I don't. But for the most part, I can cram myself into a seat. I don't take any 22-hour flights anywhere. Most flights are about an hour to 3 hours, so I can withstand cramping myself into a plane seat.
Just looking out the window now, Grant, my neighbor's Ferrari's getting picked up too, so it's a very similar experience that I have with Jason Smith. Thank you, buddy.
No problem.
Appreciate you, pal.
That's great. Jason Smith, always a lot of fun joining us on Grant and Dane. Yeah, I'm looking at my neighbor's driveway now. They must be at work because their Ferrari's not in the driveway right now.
Right.
Clearly.
Where is it?
It would be there otherwise, obviously. You're listening to The Fan. He's going to have to answer questions under oath regarding whether or not he accepted money and gifts to influence his decision to attend Duke. Williamson's appeal has been granted. That happened yesterday afternoon. So that's why this is in the news right now, meaning that he may still eventually find himself under oath, but he's appealing right now the possibility that he wouldn't have to go under oath to answer these questions. If the accusations are true and Zion admits to them, he could be retroactively ruled ineligible for his only season at Duke with the Blue Devils, and then Mike Krzyzewski of the Duke program might never be looked at the same way again, obviously. Days after declaring last year's NBA draft, Williamson signed a 5-year contract with Prime Sports. And this is kind of how this whole thing got going. It's a marketing agency that's run by a woman named Gina Ford. A month later, he fired Ford and signed with CAA Creative Arts Agency instead. So Ford, who he had signed with right before the draft, or declaring for the draft, I should say, he declared for the draft 5 days later, hires Ford, who he then fires, who comes back and now sues him, saying he unlawfully broke the contract, and she's seeking $100 million in damages. Williamson suing Ford back, saying that their contract was invalid from the start because of violations to North Carolina's Uniform Athlete Agents Act. So now Ford believes, this is the person suing Zion, that if she can prove his eligibility, that his case gets weakened and she'll have the upper hand. So it sounds like there's a motivation from her. I don't know what kind of knowledge she has of his past, but if she can prove he was ineligible at Duke, then it basically strengthens her case to win her lawsuit against Zion, as opposed to him being able to claim right now that it was an invalid contract because he was an eligible player and that she violated the Uniform Athletes Agents Act. So it sounds like maybe telling on each other a little bit there. But the big picture, as Axios writes, is if all these accusations put forth by Ford are true, Zion, his mom, his stepfather, accepting improper benefits from Nike, Adidas, and Duke, then everyone involved could be in a lot of trouble, stands to reason. Zion first, if the accusations are true, he'd either have to admit accepting improper benefits, harm his legal case, or commit perjury by lying under oath. Right. Duke, meanwhile, has largely avoided recruiting scandals. I mean, they have kind of always been viewed differently than a lot of these other schools. So if Williamson admits that he was paid, it could damage the program's credibility in a way that then leads to all kinds of investigations and then maybe getting in big, big trouble. Not the first time a player in college sports has been accused of accepting money. It's going to happen a lot more. There's just a difference between your normal player and Zion Williamson,
sure,
as Axios wrote, who was the biggest college hoops sensation maybe in the 21st century. And, oh, by the way, it's Duke, who seems to never really be, for whatever reason, embroiled in some of these controversies.
Yeah. So that is interesting. So normally I would say, well, if the player's got to go back and admit it, he's a pro now, and who cares? The world, you know, will keep turning. But there is that element of the firms going back and forth in that legal case. Again, Zion will be fine either way, but he'd prefer not to lose, obviously.
It's not like his career takes a turn for the worst or anything like that. I mean, maybe your image takes a little bit of a hit, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the bigger story here, and I don't know what this says about me, I care less about the Zion part and more about the Duke part.
Same.
Right? I mean, Duke and Coach K and those guys who can kind of just stay above the fray, it seems like this wouldn't be the case anymore.
Right. And, you know, they've always been the darlings. They've always gotten all the attention, and rightfully so, that they get attention. It's a great program. They've been unbelievable. The consistency with which they've been excellent is almost unparalleled in college hoops. It really is incredible. And Coach K was that well-respected that he could coach a group of stars with USA Olympic basketball. And, of course, everybody came in and listened to Coach K. He's that big of a figure. So, yeah, it would be a pretty big story if there's some scandal here.
Absolutely. But it is odd to me. I guess it's just the timing, and maybe I'll answer my own question. He was such a big star. I mean, he was on par with LeBron probably at his height in college basketball in terms of mentions on social, ratings every time a game's on that he's involved in. Wouldn't have been that way if he was at Texas, El Paso, or Oklahoma State or something. But because it was Duke, he was Zion, I think part of it had to do with his name, you know, the one name brand that he had established. It seems weird to me that this hasn't become a much more massive issue. I'm kind of glad that it hasn't, because I think in sports sometimes we run to be outraged and angry about like one thing, then the next day it's something else, and a lot of times vilify people more than maybe we should. But possibly it's a luck of the draw thing for him because it's happening during a pandemic and much bigger issues in the country. Like right now, what are you going to be covering? Well, you're probably covering the protests all over the land, or you're covering coronavirus. Maybe there's just not as many pages and there's not as much ink in the publication to do a lot of journalism on Zion. But don't you feel like if this would have happened a few months ago, like this would have been the biggest story in sports?
It's a good point. I mean, I remember, what was that documentary that came out? I'm blanking on it now, where we all thought we were going to get how the levels of corruption in college athletics. Remember that? And it ended up being a different story.
I never watched it. It was on HBO, though.
It was well done, but it's not what I thought we were getting. I wanted basically, this assistant coach offered me this assistant coach offered that, and everybody's scummy. It's basically about one guy and how he ended up being kind of the scapegoat, this one agent and his story. Good story. I didn't know a lot about that. That was cool, but it wasn't what I thought I was getting. So to me, the I want that salaciousness. I want the, this is what Reggie Bush got. This is what his, you know, his cousin got. This is what his mom got. I want all that stuff, and I didn't get it. So I'm interested in it, but it seems like nobody else is.
He's Danny, and I'm Grant. You are locked in on 106.7 The Fan with us for another half hour until 2, and Chad Dukes versus the world. Ben Golliver, who covers the NBA for the Washington Post, with the latest on some of the specifics in the return-to-play proposal that has been accepted. We are going to have sports. We know it now. The end of July, barring some kind of major setback.
If a player tests positive for the virus in the middle of the playoffs, do you have to take the entire team out and they have to sacrifice a series?
The answer is we don't believe we would need to. You know, we've been dealing with a group of our experts plus public health authorities down in Florida now. And the view is that if we were testing every day and we're able to trace, in essence, the contacts that player has had, we're able to, in essence, contain that player, you know, and separate him from his team. And we're continuing to test every day. The belief is we would not have to shut down if a single player tested positive.
Adam Silver, TNT, yesterday, we've been waiting on that answer, and we finally got it. So let's get some more details on this return-to-play format and how it's all going to work. Ben Golliver covers the NBA nationally for the Washington Post. Kind enough to give us some time on Grant and Danny. So if a player tests positive, Ben, Silver says they don't think that they are going to have to shut things down, a la Rudy Gobert and the Jazz previously. Do we know what the threshold is, though? What if two or three players test positive? Now, when would that become an issue where the entire team has to pay the price?
No, I mean, there's obviously going to be a breaking point at some point where you can't have guys out there on the court. Maybe a team could field enough guys to compete, and that would be a serious situation. But I think that the kind of question you're asking has just not been really addressed by the NBA yet, and I'm surprised by that. You know, if we rewind 2 months, Adam Silver made it very clear, look, the health and safety of the players is going to be the top priority. They said that they wanted to judge everything by the health data rather than just choosing a specific date to restart the season. And right now we've got a date to restart. That would be July 31st. But we haven't seen a ton of meaningful progress in terms of the health data, and we haven't heard a clear health and safety plan from the NBA. Now, they have released snippets in the past where here's how you need to run your practice facility to protect your players and make sure they're socially distanced. But we haven't gotten that full detail about how things are going to be conducted down in Orlando, what the quarantine periods are going to be like, the isolation periods before they get there, and everything else. Now, I'm told that we are going to get that information here in the next week. But to me, I just thought they got the order of operations wrong here, guys. They could have headed off questions like you're asking by simply releasing the health protocols before they released the playoff format and, you know, who's going to be in, who's going to be out, and when they start up. To me, they just did it backwards.
Ben, what about coaches? They're not all, you know, 40-year-olds, not all just recently retired. Some of these guys are upwards in age. What about that? I saw that Alvin Gentry's not thrilled with the protocols here.
We've got multiple high-risk categories here. As I'm sure your listeners know, I mean, African-Americans in general are more likely to have contracted this virus and are more likely to die from this virus. And obviously you're looking at a league that is a majority African-American. And then of course there's the age factor as well, which, you know, people 60 plus are in a much higher risk group. And that includes some NBA coaches. And of course there are going to be coaches who have multiple, you know, high risk factors, whether it's based on their own personal health history, their age, or their background. So, yeah, there's some real challenges here, and they have not worked out the details. Yesterday, Adam Silver, you know, told TNT basically that, hey, you know, maybe some coaches wouldn't be on the bench, or maybe they would, you know, be wearing masks. And he quickly walked that back because they got pushback from the coaches who say, hey, don't try to divide us up by age or any other factor. You know, we're kind of a united group here. And you can understand that position from a coach's standpoint. You don't want to be judged as kind of too old to do your job safely, or you don't want to be judged as different from your colleagues in really any way. So they're going to have to work through these issues. But the bottom line, though, is they're trying to play
an indoor full contact sport, which often puts players in close contact and proximity in huddles on the bench. There's sometimes players are sweating on each other during games, playing physical defense and everything else. They're trying to do that during the middle of a pandemic with a virus that transmits very easily in those kinds of conditions. I mean, they are assuming an awful lot of risk by bringing the sport back with the current plan, and there's really no way to do it and guarantee safety. And that is one point Adam Silver's made here, and I think he kind of sounded that alarm, probably a month ago, where he's saying we all have to be comfortable with this idea that some people will test positive, because no matter how tight your bubble environment is, no matter how much you're excluding people from the outside world, this thing can spread very quickly. And the type of activity they're going to be involved in is what I think doctors would describe as high-risk activity.
And one of the things I've heard from the baseball standpoint is that the players want the possibility of an opt-in or an opt-out. If guys who might be at more risk don't want to participate, they don't have to. Do we know if there's anything like that for basketball? Are there any stories of guys who have said, hey, this isn't going to work for me?
So we've only had a few cases like that publicly, and they were actually, quite a while ago. I would say at least a month ago, where a couple players would say, hey, I have a child who's high risk, so, I'm a little bit nervous. Or another guy said, hey, is this really worth it? When the NBPA, the players union, surveyed their players, the results came back pretty strongly that those guys wanted to play. And remember, they're getting 25% of their paychecks withheld right now. So if they come back, the players who are playing are going to get that money, some portion of that coming back to them. And that's a real motivating factor. And I think that, on both sides, it's not just that the NBA and the owners want the TV money. I think the players want their contract money as well. So I think you've got a lot of players in general who are excited to play, but I don't think there's going to be a situation where anyone's like compelled or forced to play. If players do have particular health issues, or if players are uncomfortable playing because of germs or whatever else, I imagine they would be allowed not to play. I just don't think the NBA would want to pick that particular fight publicly. Obviously, the public relations aspect of that is pretty dicey if you're trying to force people to play against their will. But I do think that we should remember, the good thing here is that most NBA players obviously are pretty young. They're in excellent physical fitness. They don't have some of the other high-risk things, whether it's, obesity or hypertension, things like that. They're not in those kinds of risk categories. So ultimately, the 10 players who've tested positive, we don't know of any really, truly serious after effects for those players. Some of them definitely had symptoms that were significant, but not long lasting. And of course, none of the 10 players died who have tested positive yet. So we have that as sort of the baseline for the other players to make up their decisions. But ultimately, they're putting a lot of trust in the league to get this thing right, in Disney to provide a safe and sound platform for them to play in, and arenas for them to play in. Ultimately, they're going to be doing it at real risk.
Ben Golliver with us here. Washington Post covers the NBA. Ben, we know what the best case scenario looks like. Nobody tests positive. You get basketball. It's this sprint and it's this fun tournament style. It feels like the NCAA meets, NBA action, and we're all in and it's great. What's the worst case scenario look like?
Well, death. Let's just say it straight out. People die from this disease. As you guys know, I think the toll is above, 106,000 the last time I looked. That's a lot of people. You can add up foreign wars, and we haven't, in some cases, lost that many people. And, of course, most of those people are not in the age demographic group that we're talking about here for players. And most NBA coaches are probably, on average, healthier than the group that is, finding itself on the wrong side of this illness. But certainly that's a worst-case scenario. And in that situation, you're going to have, if that were to happen, people would come out of the woodwork and say, what was the NBA thinking? They didn't take enough steps. And so that's really life or death stakes here, I think, is a proper way to frame this. I don't mean to be alarmist, but 106,000 deaths is 106,000 deaths. I think that, there are other bad scenarios. For example, an outbreak like you guys were describing, where maybe one guy tests positive, but he's able, in that time period before the positive test comes back, maybe he's asymptomatic, so he passes it to, say, four of his teammates and then eight of his opponents. And from there, it kind of spreads, and you're in a situation where the integrity of the competition is too badly damaged because there's too many people who are impacted, in which case you could potentially have to shut things down just because you couldn't keep the tournament going on. We've seen some situations like that overseas where various leagues have kind of brought things back, you know, started it up and then had to shut down again and then restarted. And the problem for the NBA there is that they're really running out of time. I mean, they're already pushing next season with a really tight turnaround, potentially like less than 2 months between the end of when the 2020 NBA Finals would be and the start of next season would be. So they're not really in a position to say, hey, we need to back off here. We're going to pick up this whole playoff format in 2 months once things die down. They really need it to go smoothly the first time. And, you know, I think everyone's going to hope for the best. And certainly I'm in that category, too. I don't want to come across too negative here. I just want to lay off, the real risks that are out there. And we all hope that it comes off cleanly.
Ben, really appreciate the insight. It looks like basketball will be played, barring something happening we can't foresee next month. And it's great information on the risks that are being taken still. Thank you for the time.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Ben.
Ben Golliver, you can follow him on Twitter, writes about the association for the Washington Post. This date in Nats history, and we'll hit the leftovers before we get out of here next.
I know there's not much that I can say that would make things any better right now, but I just want you to see in my eyes how sorry I am for the comments that I made yesterday. I know that it hurt many people, especially friends, teammates, former teammates, loved ones, people that I care and respect deeply. That was never my intention. I wish I would have laid out what was on my heart in regards to the George Floyd murder, Ahmaud Arbery, the years and years of social injustice, police brutality, and the need for so much reform and change in regards to legislation and so many other things to bring equality to our Black communities. I am sorry, and I will do better, and I will be part of the solution, and I am your ally.
Drew Brees last night on Instagram as part of his apology, a day in which he had a couple of public apologies and also in a meeting with his teammates apologized directly to members of the New Orleans Saints and the organization, saying he wished he could have spoken out about the need for helping level the playing field in Black communities. Obviously, you know, a lot of people have over the last couple of days tweeted and called and given their opinions on this. But Brees, it's going to take him a while to get back into the good graces of football fans around the country, many of them. But today has been way more productive in terms of mending his relationships with players than certainly this time 24 hours ago. It sounds like a lot of his teammates have accepted his apology. They've asked him to get involved and to do more good. And they are doing what I was hoping would be the case and advocating for, which is, hey, let's give good people who act well, you know, who act correctly, who are role models, who do treat people the same, who don't seem to have hateful bones in their body. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt when they say something that we don't like in the middle of an interview. Let's have a conversation. Let's see if we can find some common ground. And it sounds like the Saints have done that, Danny.
So, again, good on Drew Brees. It's easy to be cynical and say he got pressured into something, and that's your right, I suppose, to do that. But to me, this is why, you know, when you have a huge reaction yesterday, to me, my first reaction would have been, if I didn't like his comments, coming from, you know, a place as a lot of folks have expressed concern about what he said, I'd go, let's not get rid of Drew Brees. Let's work to bring Drew Brees in. You know what I mean? Let's help convince Drew Brees, who can be a great ally because he's already done so much good. Let's have him take one more step, two more steps, three, whatever the heck it is. So that's why I'm glad to see folks accepting it. And now the proof will be in the pudding. You know, what's the next step? What's the next thing that Drew Brees does given this moment right here, right? Because it's easier for a lot of people to throw stones and criticize and tell him how terrible of a guy he is because he missed the mark. Well, let's see.
Well, you'll
let's
have
let's
your
measure
Shannon
his
Sharp
deeds against others.
Reaction.
Yeah. Right.
Shannon Sharp saying he needs to retire. You know, this is the end of the road for him. I prefer kind of the Tony Dungy reaction or you know, Michael Thomas coming out and saying, I listened to him. We talked, you know, Malcolm Jenkins saying, I need you to help me here. I need these couple of things. If you're willing to do that, that'd be great. And you get on the same page that way. It is time for this date in Nats history. We do it every day before we get out of here on Grant and Danny.
Here's the set, the 0-2 pitch. Swing and a line drive left field. That is on the way. Diving try, Rotino. He trapped it. The game's over. Flores scores. Bryce Harper did it. He's being mobbed at first base. A line drive to left. Rotino dove, and he trapped it on the short hop. He came up with it, but on the bounce. And the Nationals, on a Bryce Harper RBI single, win this marathon. Zany tilt, 7-6 in 12 innings.
I was there with my pal Robin Clark, sitting first base side. I'd say probably about 16, 17 rows back. It was about 281,000 degrees there. It was a slog. It was a long game, but I remember that sinking line drive, a little bit of side spin, fell just in front of the Mets left fielder, and we got to cheer and yell at some fans in that dumb blue and orange.
Bryce Harper never had a big hit, except that one. And the other big one, and the other big one, and the other
some
big
homers
one.
Homers sometimes.
You know, those home runs in the division series. It is funny, you know, how we remember certain things, obviously. And there are people in the Nats organization that thought that, too. Like, hey, what if you lose Bryce? Well, that's okay. He doesn't always come through in big spots. Or, you know, he's never had big hits for us. It's always just kind of, really?
Yeah.
You got a short memory, don't you? But obviously, without him, everything was fine. They've played 1 year's worth of baseball, one season of Harperless ball. And all they did was win the World Series. It's not because they got rid of him, but it certainly didn't help. I wouldn't say in the clubhouse that in the past you had a guy who everybody treated differently, and now you had just a more cohesive group, veteran-laden group. It didn't hurt.
No, it didn't. That group came together. Everybody pulled the rope in the same direction, and the guy that they got to replace him pitched out of the bullpen 77 times. The playoff numbers approximately.
Make sure you listen to Tommy and Brendan noon on Sunday. For Danny, I'm Grant. Saying so long.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.